Welcome to FieldLink. I'm your host, Bill Smith. It's no secret that all adjuvants are not created equal. In this episode, we visit with Adjuvant Brand Manager Austin Anderson and North Carolina Product Specialist Brooks Barefoot on how a product like Grounded can maximize your herbicide program in 2024. Illinois producers faced many weather challenges in 2023. On this episode, Illinois farmer Tim Miles and Helena Branch manager Ruben Kohler from Toluca, Illinois, share how Tim overcame Mother Nature's challenges and how he implemented the whole farm program from Helena Agri Intelligence team on his farm this past season to maximize his farm's yields. We recently had a chance to sit down with these guests in Houston, Texas at the 2024 Commodity Classic at our FieldLink Live podcast studio. Plus, our guest market analyst, Jody Lawrence, joins us from Nashville to bring us up to speed with the latest news that can impact your farm. Stay tuned for this episode of FieldLink. In our discussion today here at the FieldLink podcast studio, we're doing some live audience recordings. This podcast will play back later as we drop podcasts across multiple platforms across the United States. Joining us today in this episode of FieldLink, we're going to focus on adjuvants and herbicide efficacy. Joining us today is Austin Anderson. And Austin is the brand manager for adjuvants for Helena. Austin, welcome to FieldLink.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
Hey, we're excited to have you here joining us from Memphis out of the headquarters as we talk about adjuvants today. And also talking with us is Brooks Barefoot. Brooks is a Helena product manager from North Carolina. And Brooks, welcome to Houston and the FieldLink podcast.
Thank you, Bill.
We're excited to get you here on the podcast today to talk about some of the things that you've experienced here this last growing season as we talk about the importance of herbicides and using the right adjuvant. Austin, why don't we start with you? Let's talk a little bit about the impact on adjuvants and what Helena does to develop the right kind of adjuvant and using that particular adjuvant in the right type of cropping system.
Well, when you think about the way that we have gone about producing new adjuvants over the last 57 years, it's really been a long journey of innovation. So we get back to our roots and get back to the basics around what adjuvants are supposed to do, and that's all around helping make sure that the pesticide or herbicide that we're using has the best chance for success and be able to get the most out of that pesticide. So a lot of what that does is that involves a lot of field testing, so at least 2 years of field work. We actually do a lot of lab work, too, where we test around the functionality. So when you think about, you know, the six true functions of what adjuvants are, it's wetting and spreading, and so we do some work to be able to determine exactly how much wetting and spreading we get. We also look at, you know, where it's appropriate for sure, like what are its impacts on water quality. When you think about absorption and penetration, that can be also needed in a lot of cases whenever, you know, you're spraying maybe in less than ideal situations. So we want to know how much that herbicide can be helped absorb or penetrate that leaf surface. You think about situations like deposition or how well does it stick and stay wet on that leaf surface from the standpoint on, you know, when that droplet dries on that leaf surface, it's no longer available to the plant for them to take it up. And then ultimately, you know, you think about things like drift, where, you know, we want to help make sure that we're delivering active ingredient on target more times than not, right? So, you know, that's the whole name of the game, making sure we get the most results out of what we produce.
And Brooks, you know, I'm going to pull you in here. You know, you're working with growers throughout the East Coast of the United States, from the Carolinas north, and you know, it's that time of year growers are finalizing a lot of their production decisions and cropping systems. How important is picking the right adjuvant for the performance of that herbicide?
Yes, sir, Bill. That's a good question. You know, when you look at adjuvants and, you know, where we're trying to position them and thinking of all the different actives that we're putting out, there's a lot of limitations that Austin touched on just a minute ago. It could be anything from water quality that could affect efficacy or just the property of water itself, you know, making sure that, you know, whatever adjuvant we're putting in with it, we're helping it, whether it's spreading, deposition, getting stuff on the target, and making sure that it stays on target and that we're getting the most out of that active that we've made that investment in.
Yeah, you know, growers are investing a lot of dollars into their herbicide programs. And really, I think, Austin, the goal here is to ensure that we're getting the most value out of that herbicide and those molecules that, you know, we're investing in on an annual basis.
Well, when you think about, you know, the new technology that's come to the forefront, specifically with active ingredients, they're more precise, they're more fragile, they're more a lot of different things. So when you think about making small changes to your application or your program approach, sometimes the adding an adjuvant is the difference between having to make a respray and being able to have a good clean field to where you're not really starting out behind the eight ball, where that's where the real investment's really going to take place.
You know, Austin, there's a lot of chatter right now, and, you know, it's across media. There's been a lot of changes here in the last few weeks around dicamba, and a lot of rules are changing, and it's continuing to move. But at the end of the day, the one thing that is certain is we've got to take advantage of the chemistry we can use and use it to the most specific way that we can. What are your thoughts around that?
So, you know, technology comes and goes, whether it's the current technology that's under a scrutiny right now or previous ones. So, you know, what I think about is something that's proven time and time again, whether it's our trials, university trials, or basic manufacturers trials, is around helping set that foundation for residual herbicide. So, and making sure that we're being able to use those right practices, whether it's, you know, laying down that good burn down to start clean and adding these overlapping residuals over time, you know, that's where we're really going to be able to make a difference. So it's going to be one of those investments that really pays off as we go through productions and stuff like that around limiting seed banks and all those sorts of things. And so really a good place to start is looking at your herbicide program, something like Antares Complete, and really being able to pair that up with the true benefits of something like Grounded, where, you know, they're really a match made in heaven, for lack of a better word. They really just be able to complement each other really nice.
Yeah, you talk about a product like Grounded, and Grounded has certainly been in our portfolio for a long time. It is that warrior of an adjuvant that is delivered for growers for, what, Austin, 26, 27 years?
Oh, yeah. Since 1988, and then we've treated over 85 million acres across the country in that time span.
So definitely a very proven adjuvant that is still delivering a lot of value to growers today. Brooks, let's talk a little bit about Antares Complete and how that combination works so well together for soybean growers.
Yes, sir. So Antares Complete, three-way herbicide designed for those pre-emergent applications on soybeans. And when you look, you know, we talked about the limitations. When you go out with a pre-emergent herbicide, there's a number of different things that we can't control, and mainly that's weather. Whether it's a wash-off event from a heavy rainfall after you make an application. One of the big ones is, especially in some of your lighter lands, is the chance of it leaching out for that, you know, pre-emergent herbicide to fall below that weed germination zone, and then you're not getting the effect that you want out of it, or being broke down from UV degradation. So there's a lot of things that we can't really control, and that's where Grounded is really proving itself to help solubilize that active ingredient, you know, to keep it on target and keep it in that top layer of that soil profile, so that active, you know, those pre-emergent herbicides you're putting out, that you're getting the response out of it that you're looking for.
Brooks, the last couple of seasons, we've had that powerful combination between Antares Complete and Grounded, you know, really sold across thousands of acres throughout the United States. Tell us a little bit about some of the experiences your growers in maybe North Carolina experienced here the last couple of seasons.
Yes, sir. So, you know, one of the big things we've seen with it is the length of control that we're getting. You know, it's the one pass days are pretty much gone on most crops, especially with all the resistant varieties and the pressure that we're getting from all the weeds. And so having that longer window, keeping those rows clean, letting that, you know, canopy develop, and then making it a lot easier for just a simple cleanup pass, especially when you're targeting some of your really hard to control weeds like Palmer and your resistant varieties.
Yeah, definitely a great, powerful combination when utilizing that. Austin, let's talk about recommendations with Grounded, you know, including some of the versatility that it has with, you know, multiple tank mixes.
Well, when you think about Grounded, it's really an all-in-one crop oil sort of solution. So when you're thinking about something like you're looking for a product that does a lot of things, they're very multifunctional. So, you know, Brooks highlighted it earlier, whether you're talking about UV degradation, you're talking about leaching, you're talking about drift control, you're talking about a lot of different things that, you know, there's really nothing out there in the marketplace like it.
Yeah, as we mentioned earlier, Grounded's been around for a long time, and there's a handful of imitators out there, but it continues to be really one of the industry standards. Is that pretty fair to say, Austin?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a mainstay for sure. Like I said earlier, you know, it's been out there since 1988. It's treated over 85 million acres. You know, the proof is in the pudding from the standpoint of, you know, we see results with Grounded time in and time out, and, you know, under a lot of circumstances, it's been put to the test and really has performed ultimately over the last several years.
Yeah, definitely. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, Brooks, help us out here, some weed control concerns that you're talking to growers about today in your geography, some weeds that they're a little bit concerned about, and as we take a look at plant 24.
Yes, sir. So, you know, Palmer's a big one. That continues to be an issue across really, especially the lower part of the, you know, the southeast and the eastern divisions, so that North Carolina to Virginia area. But there's a lot of different things that are tough to control, whether it's grasses, you know, some of our other things like water hemp, you know, resistant mare's tail. And, you know, one of the things that we've really seen a big, I guess, transition to is the pre-emergent herbicides. We've got to start strong and, you know, slow them down or stop them in their tracks. And then, you know, we are planning in most cases for those cleanup applications, you know, for things that might break through. But having a good, strong pre-emergent program and getting that applied, protecting it with something like Grounded, really is what we're trying to encourage everybody to do, to not let those escapes happen, you know, not let them get out of control.
Yeah, definitely agree. Again, I keep coming back to a wonderful combination between a good herbicide that's going to work, like Antares Complete for soybean growers, and followed with, you know, or coupled with, rather, Grounded is a wonderful tank mix combination. Austin, what are some other ways that Grounded can be applied? You know, we're focused pretty heavily here on the pre-herbicides, but boy, Grounded opens itself up to a lot of different other types of applications.
Well, you think about any product that has the need of a crop oil concentrate type of product that needs to go into the tank, or if you're in a situation where, hey, you're wanting to be pretty diligent about your drift control or situations like that, really the multifunctionality of Grounded is really, you know, flexible. Whether you're in aerial type applications or post applications, you know, it really fits in every situation.
It's one of those adjuvant choices growers can make to say, no matter really what the situation is, there's a pretty good chance Grounded's that one adjuvant that you could probably keep in the shed or in the back of your truck, and it's going to help, you know, complement any herbicide type of program.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the only thing that Grounded doesn't do, it doesn't condition water, and we've got other products to help fit that, but you know, if you're looking for, you know, overall making your application work a little bit smoother, looking to make your herbicide perform a little bit better, a little bit longer, and you're looking to help take down some of that weed seed bank when you're talking about your pre-emergent or post-emergent herbicides. So, you know, it's really something that can be utilized throughout the season.
Yeah, and definitely something growers can consider this year as they take a look at their herbicide programs. Obviously, as we mentioned earlier, there's some transitions going on with some different technologies, but the one thing that's tried, tested, and true is Grounded. Added to your tank mix for your herbicide program is certainly a great alternative. Gentlemen, I want to thank you joining us here today on this live FieldLink podcast from the Commodity Classic in Houston, Texas. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Bill.
Yeehaw!
All right. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the FieldLink podcast here at the Commodity Classic in Houston, Texas. I'm your host, Bill Smith, and we're excited to bring in a couple folks here from Illinois today to talk to us a little bit about some of their experiences. Reuben Kaler, he's with us from Illinois, runs a location out there as a salesman. Reuben, welcome to FieldLink.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. We're excited to have you here. And also one of his growers, Tim Miles. Tim, welcome to FieldLink.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. Appreciate it.
Hey, guys. Really excited to have you here inside of our studio in front of a live audience. We're recording. And we're going to share your story today about Grow 23. Let's talk about the 23 growing season. How did it set up? And, you know, what were some of the results that you guys had, Ruben?
We were dry early. We went, I'd say 8 weeks with no rain after planting. Made it to about the 4th of July. Everybody was about ready to give up on their crop, and we had a really nice, how much rain, Tim? Probably 4 inches.
Yep.
And it hit right at the perfect spot where, man, we went from about, felt like knee-high to tassel in less than 3 weeks.
Yeah, that was a turning point in our growing season, that rain. And I think all the things that we're doing with Helena kind of helped bridge the gap when we were dry, building a bigger root system using the NutriLink in furrow. We saw really, really good results from that. And I think that helped having a bigger root system to have access to moisture and nutrients when it was so dry.
Sure. In those challenging seasons, you can't predict for that. But what you can predict for is having the right, I guess, plan in place. So let's talk a little bit about your plan, Tim. You mentioned earlier you've incorporated the whole farm program with Helena. Tell us about that experience.
Well, we're approaching 3 years of ASP blends for the dry fertilizer in the fall. I mean, we're starting to see some really good results with that. Last year was our best year we've ever had, and we saw a really, really good result. So I'm super excited for 24 this year.
Okay, great. And the ASP blend is obviously a proprietary blend of fertilizer. Tell us about that, Ruben, and how do you incorporate that into Tim's plan?
Yeah, so I think as a branch in Toluca, Illinois, we have about 6 locations under me, and we've gone a lot to getting people soil tests now, moving that into VRT blends under ASK with potash, phosphate, ammonium sulfate, Resurge, and LMAX BMZ, you know, separated between the two in a VRT form. And it's been amazing what we've seen. We've had a ton of good luck. Tim's a great advocate for us, where he was, he might have been skeptical at first, but
sure.
once he saw it turn around for him and he was doing, you know, just normal DAP and potash by themselves,
sure.
You know.
We were always doing VRT before, but the ASP blends, I feel like we're getting really even uniform distribution of everything. And then obviously the stuff in furrow that we're doing with the planter now from you guys works really well. Pairs nicely.
So when we talk about whole farm, Ruben, that includes a high ground soil sampling. Tell us a little bit about that and then some of the rest of the journey that Tim gets to experience.
Yeah, so we start off in the fall or spring with soil testing. That's our high ground side. Then we go to, from that soil test and also from yield data in the fall, we put together VRT seeding scripts, which Tim uses actively on his corn and his soybeans.
And soybeans, too. Yeah. I've played with it a little bit in the past, but this year, or 23 was our first year doing all of our soybean acres, and we saw some real good results with that, too.
Wow.
Had great harvestability as well.
Really? Yeah. That's awesome.
Didn't have near as much lodging like we've seen in the past, maybe with a standard seeding rack, but our VRT seeding then goes into tissue sampling in the summertime.
Which is our extractor program.
Yep. And so from the extractor program, then we're on to On Point, which would be our record keeping port for aerial and for anything we spray, spread, etc. And then from there, we're going to harvest and we go into True Yield, which would be our yield hub, yield monitoring for our farmers.
Okay.
And then we're back to ASK blends and high ground.
So it's a full circle service. Tim, tell us about that experience.
Well, it's been a tremendous experience compared to what we were doing in the past. Ruben's really helped facilitate us, and you guys have a great team to help explain it too. Like he said, I was a little skeptical at first. You know, you see all this stuff, and it's like, yeah, right. How much does it cost? Does it really work? You know, are you just trying to push products? But no, we're really starting to believe in it, and I believe in you guys too. So.
Wow, great.
Yep.
So let's talk about your yields. We talked about how, you know, it was pretty dry starting off, and tell us about the season and what were some of your results.
Well, we had record yields on pretty much every farm. We do quite a bit of corn on corn acres, and there was no difference between first year corn and corn on corn. And I think a lot of this stuff is helping to offset that carbon penalty.
Oh yeah, so let's talk a little bit about some record yields. You know, what kind of yields were you seeing on your corn crop? And understand that was a pretty darn dry year.
It was. Yeah, it was a very challenging year, but we beat our overall farm record by a bunch this year.
Wow.
Been doing it for a long time, and we had really, really good results. Never broke the 300 mark field average. Obviously, we had some real hot spots where we played around, but Yeah, we were very, very consistent. Mm-hmm. So,
and talk to us a little bit about the soybean side.
Soybean side?
Yeah.
Well, we're actually going to be using some of the, what's the new product?
Quick Shot.
Okay.
Yep, so we're going to try that this year.
Okay.
We did some testing with NutriLink on our soybeans last year, saw some good results. So we're going to keep playing around and trying to learn and gather some data and maybe get a little more confidence on doing NutriLink on every acre of soybeans as well. So, but I'm not quite there yet. So.
You gotta crawl, walk, and run.
Yeah, right? Exactly. So, right. Yep.
So, Ruben, talk to us a little bit about NutriLink and soybeans. It sounds like you guys messed with it a little bit.
Yeah.
What kind of results are you finding?
So, it's kind of all over the board. I think Mother Nature plays a huge factor, obviously, dry, wet, whatever it may be. But in a corn crop, we usually run 3 to 4 gallon of NutriLink zinc. On the beans, we go up to 2 gallon. And so, a little less of an investment.
Sure.
But we've seen some really strong things, like he said, consistency, standability may be better. When you package all of it together, it seems like we're seeing anywhere from 2 to 4 bushel, which is a really easy investment.
Yeah.
How about inertia, Ruben? We're really excited about that on
our inertia treatment. Seed treatment. Tim doesn't buy all the seed from us today, but
you're gonna work on that. Though,
we're working on it. That's right. But he has committed to putting inertia on all of his beans, and the guys that treat his other beans are going to put it on for him. And so he moved into that. And like he said, the quick shot, obviously, I was texting him on the way down, you know, and saying, hey, you got to see this. We're just going to get revealed this week. I didn't want to let him know too early. Ooh, but the quick shot's going to be a big deal because he's used other products in the past that have some
stuff. You got to put something on. And
you do, yeah. Yep. And that's the neat thing about quick shot, which we've introduced here at the Commodity Classic. It's a fluency agent, 80-20, but also, having that nutritional package. So it's the same process. You're doing it today, right?
Yep.
Okay.
And you don't got to worry about the bugs in a jug, you know, the timeliness of using it. And I think this is going to be a real, real good alternative. So,
yeah, we're hearing some really good results, you know, 3-to-1 return on investment for soybeans. Sounds like talking to some of our product managers, we're seeing up to 7 bushel on corn,
on
too.
Corn.
So,
I like the way that sounds.
Yeah, it sounds good, especially in today's markets. We got to take advantage of everything we can.
For sure.
So, let's step back a little bit. You mentioned inertia. That was a pretty good opportunity for you. Tell us, and you had a great experience with inertia from what I'm hearing.
Have not used it yet. This will be the first year.
Yep.
So
okay.
Ruben would have to answer your question.
Yeah, so we did a bunch of plots with it last year.
Okay.
And we were seeing up to 7 bushels with inertia, you know, and on a soybean treatment for 350.
Right.
350 a bag, you know, it's like, holy cow, 7 bushel.
Ruben, can you tell us a little bit more about inertia from your experience?
Yeah.
You know, what is inertia and how do growers apply it?
Yeah, so inertia would go on as a seed treatment on your soybeans. So with your Seed Shield Max, Saltro, Nuvega, whatever it may be that you're putting on your soybeans. Inertia, though, is a biological that helps with root growth,
right?
Stimulates those roots, puts on more lateral hairs, and it does a nice job, just like Zypro, and we're putting in our starter fertilizers on corn.
Okay.
So
it's going to kick that plant in, that seed rather, you know, get some hairs going, get them roots going, which is really critical so it can reach out and get into those nutrients where we really need to be.
You bet.
Awesome. So, guys, as you take a look at 24 plant, Tim, what kind of changes are you looking at in terms of crop rotations and maybe some different practices based on the market today?
We're a little heavier corn on corn, not necessarily anything to do with the market. That's just a rotation that we had chosen, so we haven't changed anything. But we are adding Zypro in with the NutriLink this year, so that would be one change on the corn side, and then inertia would be the next big thing, plus a quick shot on the soybean side.
Okay.
So.
Quite a package there of different products, but all delivering different things.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, good deal. And what are some of the things that you're going to be looking at this year, Ruben, across the whole area?
Yeah, so I think our starter fertilizer business has really taken off. It seems like, Tim, right, ordered 2 brand-new planters with starter fertilizer on them, right? I think more of that is coming down the pipeline. We'll double our starter fertilizer business this year on the corn side.
Which is a big deal in your geography traditionally. It's
definitely
not really a starter market.
Correct. We have deep, dark soils, right? And seems like in our, you know, deeper, darker soils, we don't need necessarily starter fertilizer, but we're seeing great, great results with NutriLink, Zypro, Receptor, all of these products that we have to work in furrow or side dress, right? That it's, starter will be our biggest thing in Toluca probably to start off with. And then on the bean side would be inertia. Every bag of beans we're selling, we're treating with inertia this year. No brainer on it.
Wow, that's awesome. Tim, these are pretty big jumps. How did you decide to jump into the starter side? Have you been playing in that area for a while?
I have. I purchased one planter that had a liquid system on it. And one of my planters didn't come in time. So I naturally had a bunch of side-by-sides. So we saw extremely good results. And then obviously I was sold after that point and had the other planter come in. So this year we're going all in on every acre and not going to second guess it now.
Wow.
So.
Great. And guys, you know, as you kind of think about 24, we're moving into that era. What are some of the things that, I guess, Tim, that are keeping you up at night right now?
Market volatility is just chewing everybody up now. Anybody who's got either grain sitting in the elevator or the bin watching the market go down like this, it's very challenging emotionally. Obviously, interest rates, typical stuff. I mean, everybody's worried about the same thing. And what's the next big headline going to be? And, Brazil, their crop and Russia, Ukraine, and, typical headlines that everybody's heard. So,
and those are a lot of things we can't control as growers, but we have
to
navigate.
That bothers you the most because you can't do anything about it. And it affects you so much. So,
But it sounds like you're managing what you can manage.
I'm trying to. Yeah. So, and Ruben's helping us a lot do that. So, and his team. So. Yep.
Great. And you said a key word there, the team. Tell us a little bit about the team, Ruben.
Yeah, we're a young group. I mean, I'm 31, running a 4-location branch today. I bet our average age across the branch is 30 maybe.
Wow.
So a lot of young sales guys. Tim knows my whole team top to bottom at every location because they pull chemical and fertilizer out of each of our locations. And he can attest to just how far we've came in a short amount of time.
Yep. You guys do a tremendous job of getting everybody up to speed, and mostly everyone is fully committed no matter what it takes, the hours they'll put in, and they're always here for us. Nobody's ever said no to us before. Wow. And that's pretty rare in the industry.
That's pretty rare anywhere.
Exactly. No,
that's
a lot of special. A lot of good people. So.
Yeah, a big tip of the Stetson to you and your team, Ruben, back there in Toluca. It's great. That's an awesome journey and an awesome experience there. Well, guys, I want to thank you very much for joining us here today in this podcast as we present it live here at the Commodity Classic in Houston, Texas. And thanks for joining us here on this episode of Field Link.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
Good afternoon. This is Jody Lawrence on Helena's podcast. Brady is filling in for Bill Smith today, who had some foot surgery recently, and he is recuperating and not able to make it today. But Brady's going to be with me, give us some adventures from the road, the meetings that we've been to all winter, and then talk about a couple other topics. So the first thing is, Brady, what are you seeing in any of the markets that we need to be paying attention to?
Well, we've had pretty good rallies over the last few weeks. That off the lows, corn since February 26th is up about 27, 28 cents, and beans are up 60 to 75 cents. So definitely good to see the rallies off the lows.
Yeah, that has been a bright spot this late season because the attitude January and February up until things started to reverse late February, I think it's right at February 26th, really was understandably bleak and everybody was a little pessimistic. But it's, one of those years when you have record production like we've seen in Russia for wheat, Brazil for beans, and the U.S. for corn. When you have too much of something, you're going to have to get it to a price level where people want to buy it and use it. And it seems to me like we've gotten there because these are solid rallies that technically have made the funds cover some shorts. They're still have very large short positions, but I believe that it's going to move, it's going to keep moving in the positive direction as we get into the March 28 stocks and acreage report, and that'll be USDA's first kind of estimate and guess on what the acreage is going to be planted in the U.S. this year. We're expecting 91 million acres of corn thereabouts and 87 million acres of beans, but it's really going to depend on what the weather's like from April 15th to May 15th, because in 2023, those numbers were about what was expected also. And then the planting season was so good in May of last year that we ended up planting nearly 4 million extra acres. So the March 28th report is going to be a big deal. Brady, you seeing anything else out there?
The recent rally in crude to get back over $80, I think, has probably played a little role and helped pull other commodities up with it. And then obviously the ongoing war in Russia and Ukraine looks like has kind of escalated here in the last few days.
Yeah, we certainly had something, Russia making more aggressive attacks on the port of Odessa, and then in retaliation, Ukraine is bombing some Russian refineries that are deeper into Russian territory than several others, than a majority of the war has been fought. So I think that is going to catch some people's attention after being able to ignore the wheat market and the problems over there, that if this does become a little bit of a two-commodity war in between energy and crude oil and natural gas, because Russia is a big supplier for Europe, and then you go into wheat and corn from both Russia and Ukraine, you really start to catch everybody's attention. And if you add Russian problems with exporting or producing crude oil and refining it, in addition to the Middle East tensions in Israel and Hamas, gives a good reason why crude oil is back over $82, making new 2024 highs. And it's, you know, you're $16 off the lows, which is almost, it's right at a 25% rally. So crude oil is always something that lifts other markets. And when you look at corn for ethanol and beans for soy diesel production, higher crude oil certainly will play into be a supportive factor if it stays up here. Obviously, you wish the world was without conflict, but that's just not the world we live in right now. Brady, tell us a little bit about cotton, because we have seen a really nice rally in cotton to get everybody that's going to plant and raise cotton this year in a better frame of mind.
Yeah, so cotton recently, especially on old crop, has seen a good rally. It fell off a little bit, but then kind of came back a little. And with that, a lot with what we talked about last time I was on, China's economy needs to keep recovering. All the mills and everybody seem to be short the market, which can come back and hurt them. And then the one thing to keep an eye on while we're still at these levels is if the U.S. gets in a large crop into the ground with friendly growing conditions to start the year, how that could affect prices just to start. Not saying that it'll be the big outlook on it, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on as the cotton market loves to move in shocks and waves.
I think that is a good point. Do you have any particular strategies for the cotton producers out there who might be looking at starting to hedge some crop as December has crept up to a point where certainly there's some profitability in the market?
Yeah, so options are a very popular strategy used for cotton. Right now, who we've been talking to, we think break even for a lot of producers will be 80 to 83 cents, somewhere in that range, which we're sitting right above that right now for new crop in the December contract. So definitely looking at some put option strategies to kind of protect your floor at least your break even while you can is definitely a favorable strategy right now. And hey, we all hope it goes higher and everybody is a very profitable year, but we've seen it just in the last few years, the other side it can go, and you definitely want to be at least partially protected to a downside risk.
Okay. Well, thanks for that. And I'll bookend a little bit on that, talking about corn and beans. We're getting close to a couple of our old crop sales targets just to add and reward these rallies, because we know that they don't last forever. And with that March 28th report coming out, that we feel like if we can see corn get up to that 460 to 470 area in July on futures, that this would be a good spot to make it a few sales. Not a big jump, but a few sales, because we get up to that level, you in any market, you have to reward a 40-cent rally in corn. And then on beans, we are really looking intently, because we've got about 7 weeks now, what's going to happen with the difference between Brazil's estimation of CONAB's estimation of Brazil's crop and the USDA, because they're still nearly 300 million bushels apart. And if the USDA keeps cutting, as all indications would be that the crop is smaller than they think, then beans would be in a better position for a larger rally. So while we want to see some beans, really, we really want to see a bigger rally in beans, but it is nice that we've already gotten 70 cents out of them. Let's talk about cattle for a second, because cattle has really been red hot. I'm always a little bit hesitant about calling it a bull market because it's such an awful pun, but we made new closing daily highs for 2024, and you're just below the all-time high from back in September of last year. That when you're looking at cash trading at 190 and 194 futures, that you're really have got a great market and cattle's being supported by the low on feed numbers and a strong economic outlook, as we can see by the Dow making a new high seemingly every week. And also the employment numbers have remained strong. Unemployment is low. The job market's good if you're looking for a job. And when you have those kind of conditions, those are the things that always keep a positive demand outlook for cattle. So it got some nice things going on in several markets. If you look at cattle, you look at cotton, you look at crude, and look at some of the things that could still happen in the outside markets, I'm turning more optimistic than I have been in a while. And one of the things is within the next 7 weeks, the USDA and CONAB are going to have to make a decision to get on the same page about that crop. So I think we see in between the start of Northern Hemisphere planting, U.S. planting in particular, and some resolution to Brazil's bean crop, that we could see some interesting things happening over the course of the next 6 weeks. Anything else, Brady?
No, I think you hit on most of it. You know, Brazil's weather right now is good, not great for their safrinha crop as we head in to the next few weeks. It's an important time for them with pollination coming up. And then, yeah, the March 28th stocks and acreage report is going to be important.
Yeah, and that one becomes even bigger because it's going to be released Thursday at 11 Central. Markets will be closed for Good Friday because Easter Sunday is that Sunday. So Easter's early this year. You've got a 3-day weekend and only about 2 hours to trade the report. So we could see some really volatile trade. I hope that it's volatilely bullish, but we'll just have to wait and see what the USDA says. Well, appreciate everybody's time. Brady, thanks for filling in. Good job as always. And we wish Bill a speedy recovery. We will talk to everybody in a couple weeks. And for those of you already doing field work and planting, please be careful and good luck.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of FieldLink. And remember to ask your Helena representative on how Grounded can maximize your herbicide investment this season.